Okay. Thank you, Lars. Okay, so it's a pleasure for me to be here trying to tell you a bit about how exciting for us our program was. It's ending this week, so it's at the last part of it. We have a 13-week program starting end of April that was about exploring TV-scale new physics with LHC data. And then about 10 days ago, we had a very exciting conference on LHC, the first part of the journey. And of course, in all the parts of both in the program and in the conference, as I'm sure you all know about, the Higgs discovery has been really the main focus of all the discussions and all the excitement. Okay. So in fact, Matthias, who's here and is co-organizer, he gave a very beautiful and interesting talk on June 3rd. So it's kind of the first part of this talk, but since this is a new audience, I will try to kind of wrap up or bring you up to speed a little bit in the introduction part. But of course, many things I won't be able to say, and I encourage you to go to the video stream version and take a look if you are desperate to know more. Okay. As you probably know, on July 4th, it was announced the discovery of a new particle. Okay. 2012. Thanks God, I have Carlos to keep me straight. Yes, 4th of July 2012, okay. It was announced at CERN, the big lab in Geneva, Switzerland, the discovery of a new type of particle, basically a particle that gives mass to all the elementary particles that we have measured at colliders. And also of a new type of interaction. Most interactions we know, they connect via charge, for example, electromagnetic charge. Okay, this actually, the coupling goes through the mass of the particles themselves. Okay, so this is the idea. And this really started a new era for particle physics and for cosmology. So it has been something that has in some way revolutionize where we are standing now. And for those of you who are farther away from high energy physics, the way this was done was proton collisions at very high energy of order ATV, center of mass, at this accelerator in Geneva. And basically what we are trying to do that is to recreate energies very close of instants after the Big Bang to really create the soup of particles that were there. Okay, and I have to say that this is an enormous effort. And just to give you an idea, these collisions, okay, basically what we have is about 40 million collisions per second. Okay, and the Higgs production or the Higgs events are rare. In fact, in the year 2012, until the end of 2012, there were about 600,000 Higgs events produced in total. Okay, considering that you have 40 million per second, that's pretty rare. So why is the Higgs important? Why are we so excited about it, correct? Well, in particle physics, we have what we call the standard model of particle physics. And as I mentioned, we have all these particles that are matter particles. These are quarks, and these are leptons. And we also have what we call the force carriers that mediate the strong, weak, and electromagnetic interactions. Okay, and all these particles here, before July 4th, have been measured at the laboratory. Okay. But the Higgs that is here, or was here as a question mark, and now it's not anymore, okay, is the one that actually is responsible for giving mass to these particles. Okay, and how does that work? Okay, so what causes these particles to have mass? Well, the Higgs is actually a field of energy, okay, that is an invisible field that permeates all space. Okay, and if you think about you know, the Earth magnetic field, okay, again, is acts in a similar way, but the Earth magnetic field has the Earth itself as its source, okay, and and has a direction, okay, that is given by the spin of the Earth around itself. In the case of the Higgs field, the way the Higgs field is turned on is by self-sourcing itself. So it's the source of itself, and this is written here in what we call the Higgs potential, and the Higgs basically interacts with itself, okay? And what happens is that the Higgs potential that is here, correct? So it's, this is kind of what we are looking at, and maybe I should have done a better job here. So this is the best I have done here is a three-dimensional drawing. In reality, it's a five-dimensional drawing, what we have. But what is here is that the Higgs basically, what happens is that is more is better for the Higgs actually to be at this lower energy value, okay? And what happens is that the Higgs potential that we are seeing here describes the energetic of how the Higgs field is turned on, okay? And so what we see here maybe is that there is a global minimum, okay? That defines the vacuum state, and what really what happens is a mechanism that we call spontaneous symmetry breaking. Okay, that was thought of by Nambu, many by other people as well. Spontaneous symmetry breaking. Okay, and this by this mechanism, what really happens is that there is a symmetry of the whole system, in this case of the standard model, that is not respected by the ground state of the system itself. Okay, and this is the idea of a spontaneous symmetry breaking. Okay, so what we have is a fundamental scalar field that has self-interactions and causes this spontaneous symmetry breaking in the vacuum without really getting any preferred direction or preferred Lorentz frame. Okay. So, yes, please.
Is this a global symmetry or is it a gauge symmetry?
Yeah, we are coming to that in a second. So the idea of a spontaneous symmetry breaking could be either way. And then we're going to define if the symmetry that we are talking about is what we call a global symmetry or a gauge symmetry. That means a local symmetry. Okay, so a symmetry that actually is sensible to variations of space and time. Okay? A symmetry that is going to be broken. Correct, correct. But originally, so what I'm saying is that the system itself, what we call the Lagrangian of our system, has a given symmetry. And in fact, this potential has a given symmetry. And the symmetry is going to be broken by the fact that the vacuum state has a non-zero value. Okay, so if I would be sitting here, this would be a symmetric situation, but it's more energetically better for the Higgs field to be at a lower value, okay, and basically acquires a non-zero, what we say non-zero vacuum expectation value for the Higgs field. Okay, is that clear? The idea of, you know, in a more silly way, okay, when you arrive at a restaurant, at a table, and everything is symmetric, okay, and once go and takes which plate or which glass, well, we are breaking the symmetry spontaneously, okay? So that's the more mundane way of saying it. But in reality, this is what happens, okay? For the Higgs field, it's better to be sitting at this lower value. And so there is a spontaneous breakdown of the symmetry from the original symmetry of the system. So In reality, as you were asking there, what we have for the standard model is a local symmetry. So the standard model and the interactions of all these particles, okay, can be very well described by what we call a field theory, okay, and it's a local or gauge field theory, okay, and this field theory is actually given by a gauge symmetry group that is SU3 of color cross SU2 left cross U1 of hyperchange, and basically this is associated to the strong interactions, the weak interactions, and the good B electromagnetic interactions, okay? And each of these groups have the force carriers, and so this SU3 has 8 force carriers, this has 3 force carriers, and this has 1 force carrier, okay?
Sorry, I'm a biologist, I'm very far from this.
Okay. Good.
The Higgs boson is a force carrier or is
it
matter?
The Higgs boson is not a force carrier. The Higgs, in fact, we are. That's great that you asked me this question, because one thing is, you know, the Higgs boson, the Higgs field, Mr. Higgs, okay? But in reality, there are two things we are going to talk about. The Higgs field, okay? And the Higgs field has more degrees of freedom, okay? Some of these degrees of freedom of the system are going to be used to give mass to some of the force carriers.
Okay. So H here is neither a particle nor a field?
No, here Higgs is actually a particle, okay? But it's like the remnant that is left from the degrees of freedom of this Higgs field, okay? Once the Higgs field has done its job of breaking the electroweak symmetry spontaneously and giving mass, in fact, to these two guys, okay? So that's exactly what happens. So the as I said, I mean, this is a cartoon, okay, where we have 2 degrees of freedom. In reality, in the standard model, we have 4 degrees of freedom, okay? And what happens is that 3 of these degrees of freedom are eaten, so to say, to give mass to this. This is a charged particle, so it's 2 degrees of freedom. This is a neutral. So 3 of these degrees of freedom are eaten to give mass to these guys, okay? And 1 degree of freedom is left as a physical state in the field, in the theory, and is the Higgs particle.
So it's kind of a byproduct of this important symmetry breaking of the field.
Correct. So in fact, the issue that we have measured the Higgs particle, okay, is a way of saying that our ideas of this Higgs mechanism are correct. Okay, and still, of course, there is many options. Okay, so because we can measure the byproduct of this mechanism, correct? So we know that these guys have masses. We have measured the masses. They are very important, because if these particles would not have the masses they have, then the weak interactions would not be short range. Could be infinite range, like for example electromagnetism with a photon that is massless. Okay, and in fact, what the Higgs does is breaks this symmetry, and I wish I could be taller, but what it does, it breaks this symmetry, so this is our standard model, okay, this symmetry to what we call U1 electromagnetic, okay? And so there are 2 parts that are left unbroken, the part related to the strong interactions, and that's why the gluons are massless, okay? They don't interact directly with the Higgs, they don't couple directly to the Higgs, and the electromagnetic interactions, and that was the photon, is massless. Okay? Is that better? Or yes or no? Okay. So as I said, in the process of the Higgs mechanism, we are left with the Higgs particle, and we are left with masses for the W and the Z. And in fact, all these other guys here, okay, they also acquire mass, okay? These guys are neutrinos, and maybe I, at the very end, if I have a sec, I will say something about the Higgs and neutrinos, because it's not so straightforward. But all these guys acquire mass through what they are called Yukawa interactions, another new type of interactions. And as I said, both the interactions of the Higgs with these gentlemen or ladies and the interaction of the Higgs with the matter particles, they are all proportional to the mass of the particles themselves. Okay? Good. So, of course, I'm already off guard, but okay. So the point is, so we have this mechanism of spontaneous symmetry breaking, and we have measured the Higgs particle. But of course, the first thing is, how do really we search for this Higgs particle, correct? So the idea is that there are quantum fluctuations that create and annihilate particles, you know, thinking about the uncertainty principle, okay, delta E times delta T equal H. The quantum fluctuations can produce the particles at the LHC. And as I told you, the gluons do not couple directly to the Higgs, but they do couple through all these other particles that are here. And the reason that it mainly I put the top quark here is because the top quark, as we will see, correct, the Higgs we have measured has the mass of the Higgs is 125 times the proton mass, okay, which means 125 GeV. Okay, and these particles have very different masses, okay, but the heaviest is the top quark that has about 172 GeV or proton masses, okay. And so the coupling is proportional to the mass, and therefore the coupling of the Higgs to the top quark is much stronger than to any of the other particles. The one coming later is the bottom quark, and that's like 5 GeV, okay? So the Higgs couples to the gluons through virtual top quarks that are running in the loop. And in fact, this is the largest process of all of them. 87% of the production that we see is through this what we call gluon fusion, okay, which is this type of diagram. Yes.
Where does that number come from?
This is basically by computing the production cross section being proportional to things like the strong couplings here, the coupling of the top to the Higgs, and the mass of the Higgs itself. Yeah, it's a theory prediction. It's just to give you an idea of how differently important these processes are, okay? Because of course we are going to measure at LHC all these Higgses, and we want to know how we produce them and what are we testing, okay? Because if we want, this is assuming that we have only the standard model of particles, but this lecture is about going beyond that, going new physics, and what will happen is that what I'm telling you here could be different, correct? That's the idea, okay? And we're trying to explore if it is different, okay? So in the standard model, so this is within the standard model, correct? Assuming a standard model, we have gluon fusion, that is through virtual tops. We have what we got vector boson fusion, that is through virtual Ws, and this is about 7%, okay? We have quarks. So this is, of course, you have to think that this is my proton, okay, here. Two protons, the protons are coming, correct? Here, I don't know. Okay, and they basically radiate gluons, and this is what I see. Or I get a quark from the protons. Okay, yes.
One half of the mass of the top quark.
It's not that only the ratio between the masses. It's many other things because the gluons inside the proton is actually, in fact, part of our of the conference, and some of the people who are here work very hard to compute these cross sections at next to next to next higher order precision. Okay, so it's not so straightforward. But just to give you an idea, so of course when we measure this process, we will be testing how the Higgs couple to the tops. When we measure this process, we will be measuring how the Higgs couples to the Ws, okay, or the Ws and the Cs here, okay. And so you see in the production, basically we are testing the couplings of the Higgs to the W, how the Higgs gives mass to the W, and how the Higgs gives mass to the top, okay. And then by the same way, the way we see the Higgs at the collider is we have, you know, amazing big detectors with many layers like onions, and they are going to try to see what these standard model particles, okay? Because the Higgs is produced that way, but also decays, and again, via virtual processes, okay? So we have, for example, through quantum fluctuations, we have a photon and a top loop, okay? And the Higgs, again, connects the scalar particles. This is just a jargon that we do things in. Fermions are solid lines. Gauge bosons are wiggle lines. And scalars, the Higgs is the only scalar we think, the one fundamental scalar, just dash lines. Okay, this is a jargon. These are called Feynman diagrams. So the Higgs, again, interacts with the photons, okay, through virtual tops, okay? So which means that I produce this Higgs, and then once I produce, the Higgs decays into two photons, okay? And I will see these photons in the detector. Or the other option is I have the Higgs. The Higgs is 125. The Z particles are about 90 GeV, so obviously I can produce two of them, but I can produce virtually at least one of them. And then these guys decays into electrons, for example, okay, or into muons. And what I see in my detectors, okay, is either the Higgs going into two photons. In fact, the discovery modes at LHC, the discovery modes have been the Higgs going to two photons or the Higgs going to four leptons, which means four leptons, okay, which means four muons, four electrons, or two electrons and two muons, depending. These guys can go either way, okay? And this is actually, I don't know if this is going to work. Clearly not, yes. So I just want to show you the two ways in which the Higgs has been discovered, okay? And then we'll move to what we think is next now, okay? So, so as I said, so here it is, okay? We have the Higgs gamma-gamma candidate. So these are all the many, many tracks of many, many particles that we try to recognize within the detector, okay? These are the direction in which the beam proton and proton collide. And we produce two photons that are observing something that is called electromagnetic calorimeter, okay? So we see these two photons. So this is a search for a narrow mass peak in two isolated photons with high energy. And of course, if we see one of these events, you know, it's like statistics, we wouldn't know if that's the Higgs. In fact, has been a lot of work. And if you look there, starting on April 21st of 2011, and you keep looking at the dates, okay? So this is actually the number of events as a function of the mass of the two photons, which basically is the mass of the Higgs. Okay? And so you see, not so clear unless you put the red line, but just clear for people who have their eyes used to do that. Okay, this is the Higgs discovery with all the data, not only to the 4th of July, but to the end. LHC is now stalled, okay, till we'll start again running, hopefully, in 2015. Okay. So, but till the end of December. So this is the Higgs discovery in gamma-gamma, okay? And I won't bother you with that. This is actually the Higgs discovery in this four-lepton channel, and there are two experiments. One is called CMS, and the other one is called ATLAS. They are huge, humongous experiments, four story high, and as heavy as the Eiffel Tower, at least one of them. And so you see, for example, again, this is the Higgs, and then what we see is not the Higgs. What we see is the four muons in this case, or two electrons, okay, and two muons, for example. Okay, and in that case, the way you see things is even more delicate. We collected that data. Again, you see, this is also up to the end of 2012. Okay, here is the Higgs peak growing, okay? And this is other standard model processes that we know and understand, okay? Because otherwise, we wouldn't be able to say that this is something new, okay? So this is the way the Higgs was discovered. And one last thing I want to say is that we were so lucky that the Higgs turned out to be 125 GeV and not 200, okay? Because it happens, among other things that I like it more, but it happens that at 125 GeV, all these Higgs decaying into all these particles, okay, has important probability. So We call branching ratio the probability that the Higgs goes into a given particle. Okay, and as I said, that depends in part on the mass of the particle, but on the relative masses of the particles. So for a Higgs, and on the kinematics, on how much the Higgs, you know, 125 GeV Higgs, how much can it decay into particles? Of course, not particles that are heavier than itself, unless they are virtual. So at this mass, only 11% of its decays are blind to us, and we can look into the other decays. So in particular, we are going to be looking...
Can I ask a question?
Yes, before I go down, or...
So no. Should I understand that the Higgs was discovered as something not fitting the standard model prediction?
Well, within the standard model, we propose the existence of the Higgs. Okay, because it's necessary for the mathematical self-consistency of the theory. Okay, so all what we were looking is we are looking for this standard model Higgs.
But the blue line that you showed, you said where the predictions of the standard.
These things here. Okay, there are other processes in the standard model, and the one that was missing was the one of the Higgs, but we didn't know. Oh well, I'm done there. We didn't know really if the Higgs was going to be 125 GeV or 200 GeV, okay? So we didn't even know where to look. We knew, for example, that in these other processes, we knew what they were, okay, these processes. Is that correct? So far I have not gone beyond the standard model, so I better start moving. Because Lars told me, you are supposed to talk about beyond the standard, new physics. You are supposed to talk about new physics, and I'm trying to be obedient. So far, this is all a standard model, okay? And of course, we have, as I said, we have measured Higgs 125 GeV mass, about 125 GeV. We have measured the case into the discovery modes, okay? I have been these two that I show you. These are the discovery modes, okay? In these modes, we have measured that the Higgs is approximately 125.5 GeV. Okay, there are something that we call the supporting modes, because we know that the Higgs, if it is a standard model-like, should decay to other things. In particular, we should see the Higgs decaying to the W bosons of the weak interactions. Okay, and these guys basically would decay to other things like leptons and neutrinos and maybe two sheds. Okay. So these are a bit harder, because when they are neutrinos, neutrinos escape detection. And so the way we usually look for things is we know how much energy we put in, we know how much energy is coming out. And neutrinos are missing energy. It's something we are not seeing in the detector. In fact, other thing that is missing energy is dark matter. Okay, and we'll go back to that. Okay. But this is also, they have also seen this decay within a few sigma, and I have the numbers here, but it doesn't really matter. In these modes, okay, things have been, the discovery would be at the level of 5 sigma, so we are really sure that the Higgs is there, okay? In these modes, they are what they are called the supporting mode at the moment, okay? When we have much more data, when the LHC keeps running again, we are going back, of course, to pin down these and measure things better there. And then, of course, the Higgs decays, in fact, almost 60% to this a pair of bottom quarks, this guy here, okay? Why so much? Because this is the heavier guy it can decay into. It cannot decay into this guy, because this guy is 172 GeV and the Higgs is only 125. So it's very suppressed, the decay. So the Higgs decays to this, and the Higgs decays to the tau plus, tau minus, that is the heavier of the leptons, okay? So these are like 60% of the time decays into BB bar, into a pair of bottoms, and about 6% decays into a pair of taus. But these channels are harder to disentangle from the rest of the standard model processes. And for example, in taus, they are starting to see it, but they need more for more data. And for bottoms, one of the experiments see it, the other one is starting to see it. Okay. So the important thing here is that we have measured the mass. We are very lucky that we can measure the Higgs in all these possible decay modes because of the mass being 125. If the mass would have been 200, we only would have been able to look at the Higgs in WW and CC and basta, nothing more. Okay, so it would have not been so good. And all measurements are really compatible with the standard model. Okay, and what that means is that also within the standard model, we know that, for example, the Higgs boson has to have a spin 0, could also have a spin 2 if it were beyond the standard model. But we know that because it couples to photons, there's a theorem that proves that it cannot really decay into a spin 1 particle. Okay. So, moving into new physics, I'm pushing myself there. So we have discovered a new particle. Maybe I move from the standard model for a moment, okay? We know that the new particle we have discovered is within errors compatible with a standard model Higgs, but we also know that there is plenty of room for having some new physics in this Higgs discovery, okay? So the question you should ask me is, well, why do we expect new physics, correct? Why? Okay. The first answer is because I don't want to be jobless, but this is not what I'm going to write here. I guess the first answer is it could be awkward, okay? This is also very my taste, okay? It would be awkward to have nothing, maybe, up to the scale where gravity, maybe up to a Planck, the scale where gravity becomes relevant, okay? A much more appealing reason of why new physics, okay, is because maybe it can give us a handle on things like dark matter, the matter-antimatter asymmetry. So we are here because of a matter-antimatter imbalance. So the matter-antimatter asymmetry observing the universe, okay, it can tell us something about, maybe about why or how, why neutrino masses, neutrinos, so light. Okay, we know that neutrinos have mass because we have seen them, they kind of oscillate, okay, but we don't really know. They are much lighter than any other particle. What else? Yeah, and also, we have these particles of the standard model. They have very different masses, and they have a definite, what we call flavor, means, you know, up versus down versus charm. So this is different flavor, okay? So we would like to understand better the flavor structure of the standard model, or the standard model, or beyond, okay? And so we are hoping that some new physics could give us explanations to that, okay? So what are we doing now? You know, we discovered the Higgs. So what is the post-Higgs discovery? So the post-Higgs discovery era, okay? There are a few, I would say, main questions we are asking, and when I'm saying that is because we think the Higgs can have something to say about it, okay? The question would be, well, we are done, we discovered the Higgs, it more or less fits the standard model, let's go home, okay? We want to see that maybe there is new physics, and that new physics maybe help us explain these crucial questions we have, okay? So if we go to the post-Higgs discovery era, the main question we have is there what we call a Higgs portal to dark matter? Okay, that's one of the questions. Does the Higgs make our universe unstable, and I will go to that. Okay. Can the Higgs trigger the genesis of matter? So the matter-antimatter asymmetry. And I guess how the Higgs talk to neutrinos. Correct. And then the last one that I will put with a grain of salt here is there a Higgs connection with dark energy? Which frankly this is a farther stretch at the moment, I would say. But people, of course, are thinking about it. Okay? So, this is the big questions, correct, that we want to answer. But being a poor man or poor woman dealing with the data, there are also the basic questions that we have. And the basic questions is, what if, you know, so there are two or some basic questions, correct? And the basic questions are more humble, okay? And it would be, is the Higgs coupling to matter particles proportional to their masses, correct? Because this is one huge question. We are saying, we are postulating the existence of a new interaction that couples like the mass of the particles and so on. Is this really the case, or can we depart from that? Okay. And the other one is, are there more Higgses? You know, we are more Higgs particles. Okay. So it can be that in many, of course, we have been waiting for the LHC. We have been really cooking up many theories beyond the standard model, okay? And in all these theories beyond the standard model, in most of them, there are many Higgses, okay? So that means that we start with our original degrees of freedom. We use three of them to give mass to the W and the C, but then we are left with more physical degrees of freedom, okay? And it depends a lot on the new physics. It could be also, for example, one of the things that the experiments have done is that to prove that the Higgs, as it is expected in the standard model, is even under charge and parity conjugation symmetry. Okay, but it is possible, there is room for it to be to have an odd component into this charge and parity conjugation. And charge and parity conjugation is a symmetry that is violated partly in the standard model. And it's crucial to generate, for example, the process of baryogenesis that is generating the matter-antimatter asymmetry. So if we would see that there are some new sources of charge parity violation that could be in the Higgs, that would be also interesting. Of course, the main question, as I said, is the Higgs decaying to dark matter particles? Is the Higgs decaying to missing energy? Okay. So the way we will, at the collider, the way we will see dark matter, okay, so we know that there's dark matter all around us, but at the collider, the way we'll see dark matter is we know, as I said, how much energy we put in. We can take account of how much energy comes out. And the imbalance is the missing energy. We know that neutrinos are missing energy, but neutrinos, we understand them reasonably well, and we can evaluate how much missing energy would be there, correct? If there would be a lot of missing energy, that would be a signature of dark matter being created at the laboratory. Yes? Oh God! I will not to divert too much, but at the end I answer it to you. I will give a funny answer, which is my son was doing an interview to my good colleagues at the University of Chicago about dark energy and dark matter. He came back and he told Mom, I'm going to report on dark matter because about dark energy, you guys don't have a clue. So, but I come back to that. It's an imbalance of the total energy. Dark matter is really what holds, I would say, the galaxies and the world together. Okay, so it's matter as well, correct, rather than energy. Okay, so let me go.
Sorry, you call it new physics because, I mean, it's difficult for people outside to understand why it's called, you know, a new theory. I mean, is it like a new particle opens the way to a new formalism and explaining new phenomena? Are you trying to explain new phenomena or to explain or to provide new formalism for known phenomena or for, you see, you do experiments at the LHC and so you can observe things which tell you something about the world, where it works. And you have also formalism sort of precede that, and you try to find consistency.
Correct.
It's saying you look for new physics, or you're hoping for new physics to have a job, but more seriously, are you trying to explain things which at the moment there's no explanation for, and the Higgs might be the clue, or are you trying to look for hidden corners of the world by some other experiments, and using the Higgs as a key to answering them, or something else?
Okay, so the point to the first part. So we kind of build up this standard model, and when we are thinking new physics, is anything that we have not thought of that is inside the standard model, okay? That's what we say the Higgs could be just the standard model, because the standard model has the Higgs as part of it. We didn't see it before, we didn't observe it before, but it's part of the standard model, okay? However, this means that up to the energies we have been able to probe at high energy collider experiments, okay, everything behaves as if all what we have put in the standard model is pretty well on solid grounds, okay. We say, well, we build the theory, we are testing it, so far it has withstood, you know, the challenges of the experiment, with high marks, too high for our taste, okay. But the standard model cannot provide explanations for this, okay? Within the standard model, for example, we have neutrinos, and they could be dark matter, but they're not enough. The W's and the C's, they decay very, so there is no candidate in the standard model, okay? In the standard model. So we need to think about something beyond that, correct? Something beyond that, that has not been already excluded by all the experiments we have done. Correct? So in terms of energy, has to be we have probed energies up to the order of what we call the weak scale, that is a couple hundred giga electron volts. Okay? So whatever is new has to be at that level or above. Okay? The standard model also doesn't have a very good explanation of how we doesn't have an explanation. For example, the idea that I want to tell a bit about that is baryogenesis at the electroweak scale, within the standard model, this is not possible. Okay, and the standard model does not tell us, you know, we are putting these values for the masses and we are saying the neutrinos are light by experimental evidence, but we don't have a way to explain it, okay? So the standard model fits everything we have seen really great, okay? And in that sense, that's what we call a standard physics. But to answer these questions here, the standard model is not good enough. Okay, and so when we say new physics, it's anything we are putting in that is not the standard model.
Beyond the standard model.
Beyond the standard model. It's BSM. Beyond the standard model is what we call.
What I find a bit paradoxical is that you presented, or at least I understood, the Higgs as being predicted by some processes in the standard model.
Because the Higgs.
And now you want to use the Higgs as a potential way to go beyond this model.
Correct. Because, for example, and this is a perfect example, okay, I told you this is 87%. This cross section, the production of the Higgs through this gluon fusion has been computed at next to higher order accuracy by theorists, and it's being measured in different ways, okay? I have, of course, to measure the production, and then I have to look at this guy decaying to something, correct? Because what I look is the Higgs going to gamma-gamma, or the Higgs going to four leptons. So I will produce this, okay? And what I'm seeing is that For example, if I would have here other particles, heavier particles, that could interact with the Higgs, it will change this production. Okay? So what I'm trying to see is, I look at experimental evidence, okay? I look at precise measurement of the production and decay processes, okay? And I can see if there is room for other particles going into the loop. Or I told you, for example, that, you know, 60% of the Higgs goes into bottom quarks, okay? But if the Higgs also decays to dark matter, that would change enormously, okay? So I have not measured yet Higgs into bottom quarks at a level of accuracy that I can say anything about it, okay? It could still be that the Higgs decays to dark matter particles, and I don't know it because I have not seen it, okay? So at the moment we have seen this discovery modes, Higgs to gamma-gamma, Higgs to four leptons, all at the level of accuracy I have been able to measure things, it is okay with what we think from the standard model. But it could be something very different. And if it is something very different, I would be very happy that that very different could tell me something about these things I need to understand. Is that clear? Or yeah. Okay, but it's not clear as my schedule, but okay. I started a few minutes later. Yeah. This thing, 20 minutes late. No, just kidding. Okay, so one thing that maybe I don't go into a lot, because there are different theories of beyond the standard model, okay, that we have thought of. And some of them have been excluded by having a Higgs 125 GeV. Okay? So the idea is, now I measure the Higgs. I measure to some accuracy how the Higgs is produced and how the Higgs decays. Okay? And I want to see which of my beyond the standard model theories, which of my new physics, are still alive. Okay? And there are different reasons to think about how the Higgs could be. And this is a bit tricky in the sense that I don't want to lose you guys here. So we are trying to, I'm just debating if I go into this or not. Okay, so the idea is that there is something that is called, maybe not. I just want to, well, there are different type of solutions, and I'm not going to go into why we thought about some of them, okay? But if you want to ask me afterwards, I will be delighted to tell you. There are some issues that are related about how we connect measured quantities to computed quantities at a different energy scale, okay? And sometimes our theory has some infinites that we don't know how to deal with, okay? And we deal with them by doing something that is called regularization. And what means is that we take some quantity measured at some given scale, okay? And we kind of, this measured quantity defines or kind of bounds or regularize all our infinites, okay, that we don't know how to deal with. And then any same quantity at a given scale, we will give it as a function of this known measure value. And we have done that with the standard model many times. The problem is we could, or we should do that in principle with the Higgs mass itself, okay? And although I'm not going to go into details, what happens is that if there are particles that are much heavier than the Higgs particle itself, okay, there would be, we would need to tune the new theory very precisely to very few percent degree in order to really achieve a mass of the Higgs at low energies the way we know it is, okay, at the 125 GeV, okay? So the idea is that if there are new particles, okay, at energies, you know, 10 to the third giga electron volt, okay, the Higgs mass is 125, 10 to the third, 10 to the 17, whatever, that would create some problems. And we, it could be okay, but we are uncomfortable. The theories are uncomfortable because you have to say, well, you know, I have to have two quantities that are very close to each other, that are very big, and they have to cancel each other very precisely to give a quantity that is much smaller. So this is what we call the hierarchy problem. And the hierarchy problem, within the standard model itself, it doesn't exist, because the heavier particle I have in the standard model is a top quark that is very close to the Higgs. Okay? But if I would have other particles much heavier, that would be a problem. The only way, or one good way out, so there are two known way outs. One is to think about a new symmetry of nature. That is called supersymmetry. And I don't know how many of you have heard of supersymmetry. Of the non-high-energy physicist. No, OK. So I told you that we have the standard model particles, OK? And I said we have all the fermions. And then we have the gauge bosons, the force carriers, OK? So I have all the fermions of the standard model. I put there up, down, sorry, charm, strange, top, bottom. I put all of them, no? And also the leptons, electron, muon, tau, neutrino, electron, neutrino, muon, neutrino, tau. Well, these are all fermions, okay? And what this symmetry does is that for each fermion of the standard model postulates the existence of a boson. Okay, particle with different statistics. Okay, so I will have what we'll call the, these are called the quarks, these are the leptons. I will have here the squarks. Okay, and the thing for these guys is that this is the top, this is the bottom, and the same for the leptons. Here I will have the leptons, or supersymmetric partners of the leptons, basically. Okay, so these are the leptons. These are the squarks. And at least you won't forget them because they have a funny name. So so the point is we are doubling the spectrum of particles. Okay, for the gauge bosons, the force carrier that are the W, the Z, the gluon, and the and in some way, let me put it the other way, because these are guys that are spin one, correct? Well, doesn't matter. So for the W, the C, the gluon, and the photon, I will also have, these guys are spin one, okay? These guys are spin one half, okay? These guys now are going to have integer spin, and these guys instead would have fermions. So the fermions will go to bosons, and the bosons, that are these guys, will go to fermions, okay? And we call them funny-wise, Wino, and Sino, and Fotino, and Gluino, okay? And of course, the Higgs is also a boson, and we'll have a fermion that is called Higgsino, okay? So we have the Higgs somewhere here, and we have Higgsino. This is a, you know, people make this joke, we have discovered half of the particles of supersymmetry. We are almost there, okay? But the other half is being tougher because we have not discovered any particle yet. The way we postulate it is not so out of the blue, okay? In some way, in quantum electrodynamics, at some point, in a similar way, to solve also a mathematical inconsistency, so to say, of this idea of dealing with infinites and renormalizing the theory, we propose the existence of the antiparticles, and that solved the problem. So that was a symmetry between matter and antimatter. This is a symmetry between fermion and bosons. Okay, for every boson, a fermion; for every fermion, a boson. Okay, so we are hoping that history repeats itself, but we don't know. Okay, of course, supersymmetry. What it does, it propose the existence of this symmetry where the particles have the same type of couplings. The fermions of the standard model, the same type of couplings, so they interact in the same way as the bosons that we are proposing, okay? And also they have the same mass, okay? We already know that supersymmetry must be broken, okay? Because, for example, we have not seen any of these superpartners, okay? And we should have seen some of them. So in reality, there should be some breakdown of the supersymmetric theory, okay?
What is it that tells you that you should have already seen?
Well, because you at colliders, okay? Because the because of this reason that I said that the coupling is the same for a particle than for a supersymmetric particle, okay? We know with which strength it has to be produced. And if we know the strength with which it is produced and the mass should be the same, then we should have seen it, correct? Not for all the parts. There are a lot of plus and minus there, but for sure we know that many of those should have been produced and have not been produced. Okay? So we are here with the Higgs, correct? So what we want, and I lost totally my notes now, I don't even know where I am. So we want to know, so we propose this supersymmetry as a way to solve some mathematical inconsistencies of the theory if we want to have something of new physics. Okay? Within the standard model, we are fine. But if we would want to have new physics to solve these problems, and of course, supersymmetry solves this inconsistency or gives a possible solution to this inconsistency and does very other nice things for us. For example, has a nice dark matter candidate. Okay? And for example, may have a solution for the matter-antimatter asymmetry of the universe. Okay? And for example, one thing I never told you, but in order to have, since I lost my thread at the beginning there, I put this Higgs potential here, and I very elegantly put a mass term, okay, for the Higgs. So this is a term that gives mass to the Higgs. In fact, the mass of the Higgs that we are measuring is equal to minus 2 mu squared, and it's equal to 4 lambda v squared when we solve this potential. And in order to have a solution that gives me a possibility to be sitting at this minimum here, this mass parameter in the Higgs potential needs to be negative. In the standard model, I just went and I put it. There are two things that I know now in the standard model. First of all, in the standard model, I put this to be negative. In supersymmetry, this is generated by quantum fluctuations. Okay, it's dynamically generated. The other thing that is nice in supersymmetry is that in the standard model, now I know that this self-interaction, this is the strength of interaction, this is of the order of 0.13. And I know that because I have measured the Higgs mass, okay? And therefore, and I know this is the value of the Higgs there, and this value is value v actually is something that we know from before from having measured things like beta decay, so a neutron, many in 1930. Okay, we measured that the neutron go to a proton, an electron, and an antineutrino. Okay. And at this moment, we got information of this vacuum expectation value to be of the order of 174 GeV, depending on normalization, correct? So now we know, after knowing the Higgs mass, we know which is this interaction, we know with this parameter, but we don't know why this has a negative value, okay? We put it by hand in order to have this spontaneous symmetry breaking. In supersymmetry, instead, this is dynamically done, which is a nice feature, okay? You don't look happy. Yeah? Do? Yeah.
I have one question. Yeah. If you have a candidate for the dark matter particle, I'm really curious. Which one would that be?
It's actually a mixture of... it's a mixture of these guys. The same way... Well, yeah. So these guys have some properties by which they can mix, and the mass eigenstates are called neutralinos. There are four of those. The lightest neutralino, if you look at the degrees of freedom of these things, everything fits nice. The lightest neutralino is a good dark matter candidate. And it's a mixture of xeno, photino, and Higgsino. And how much of a mixture it is depends on how, for example, how they could interact with the Higgs, and we can detect it in direct detection experiments. Yes, we do. Well, we do within some assumptions, correct? So if we do the assumption that dark matter is a thermal relic, okay, then one can actually say that the dark matter density is related to the annihilation, goes like 1 over the annihilation cross-section, okay? And if one compute what the dark matter relic density is, one can see that for, let's say, a dark matter candidate somewhere between, so it's what is called the WIMP miracle, okay? For a dark matter candidate with more or less between 100 or 10 GeV maybe and 1 TeV, and cross-sections, interactions of the order of the weak scale, this works fine to give us the relic density that we have measured, okay? But this is a wide spread, okay? And in fact, the Higgs portal, what I hope to say now, in a second, at least since you asked the question, I will at least jump into that. I said before that one of the things is there a Higgs portal, okay? And let me just step aside of supersymmetry for a second, and well, it is within supersymmetry, but let me just say that, for example, we are measuring, you know, we are searching for dark matter in many ways, okay? And one of the experiments is direct detection, that we basically hope that we are deep underground, we have a nucleus, and, you know, we have, a dark matter particle coming, there is my nucleus, okay? Hits the nucleus, boom, and the nucleon recoils, okay, and have some recoil energy. These are big direct detection experiments, correct? And the problem is for dark matter, all the information we have from dark matter is through the gravitational interactions from dark matter, correct? We want to know if it interacts otherwise, okay? That's what we are trying to test here. And of course, one question is, does it interact with Higgs, okay? The Higgs is mass to all the particles. Does it connect in some way with dark matter as well? And in fact, these direct detection experiments, okay, that I'm sure direct detection, that you have heard a lot about it, you know, there are many experiments around the world in underground labs, and, you know, there are some cross-section, okay, of the dark matter nucleon scattering, okay, in centimeter square, okay? And these experiments, and this is the mass of the dark matter particle, let's call it M chi, okay? And here is like 10 GeV, and here is like maybe 1,000 GeV, okay? In a kind of log scale. And let's say this cross-section is, let's put 10 to the minus 39 centimeter square, and let's put like 10 to the minus 45 centimeter square, okay? And we have looked, okay, at we have looked with different experiments. You know, there are different curves. You can put different curves of different experiments. And basically, what we see is that this is all excluded, okay, which means that the interactions of this dark matter with other particles is pretty weak, okay. If we think about does the dark matter, for example, interact with the Z boson of the standard model, correct? I can look at that. I know that, of course, I can search for this decay. And so if I look, for example, at the dark matter particle, let's call it chi, okay, interacting with a nucleon through a Z boson, okay, this is the nucleon, okay, here, this cross-section would put me somewhere here. Okay, which means that the interaction of dark matter with the Z boson is not through these weak interactions, because these processes have been excluded. It's in the excluded region. Okay, if instead I look at dark matter interacting with the Higgs, okay, of course there are some assumptions here. For example, that these couplings I know of the Z boson are the standard model couplings. These ones could be a standard model, it could be a bit different. But these couplings, of course, are a question mark, okay? But if assume those are of order not very big and not very small, of order one, correct? For a Higgs 125 GeV, and you would say I just tune it, but it is that way, we are sitting here, okay? And for a Higgs 500 GeV, this is for 500 GeV, and this is for 125. Of course, this is, I'm being very generic. There are a lot of models leaking down here, okay? Depending how what I am assuming for this interaction. And this is model dependent, of course, correct? But the important thing is that is what we call the Higgs portal, okay? If that matter is interacting with the Higgs, okay, we are at the moment in the next few years, or the next decade, I guess, these experiments that are becoming, you know, one-ton type of experiments are going to either discover or prove dark matter through Higgs portal. Okay? So, I think I gave like one-third of my talk, but that's fine. Maybe I should say one thing I want to tell you, just is the Higgs, there are two things we want to learn about that, correct? Many things, actually. You can come ask me very late. Like, this is very cool, how dark a good how you create matter antimatter in these models. As you, supersymmetry is not, first of all, let's put these points on your head. Supersymmetry is not, all, of course, not the only theory beyond the standard model. There are other theories beyond the standard model that are called composite Higgs models, and they try to mimic at higher scales quantum chromodynamics. And for those of you who know, the Higgs there is like the pion in quantum chromodynamics. Those models are okay with a Higgs of 125, but again, would predict different type of production and decay processes for the Higgs. And, you know, this is a very nice, I think I do this. This is 125 GeV Higgs, okay? This is like 200 for MH, okay, in GeV. And this is like, let's say, 100. And people like to make this thing, but this is like the standard model. And the only bad part about the standard, so we are standing here, correct? This is where the experiment puts us. Well, one thing I want to tell you so that you get excited about it is that in this area, we are in a metastable vacuum. So for our great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren, maybe we bloop, disappear, but that's pretty unlikely. So this is in the standard model. This is in the standard model. If we are in supersymmetry, okay, it's sitting here. This is minimal supersymmetry, and maybe we can extend it a little bit. This is SUSY. And then there are all these composite Higgs models that are sitting here. Okay, this is composite Higgs, a total different type of models. So all these models can accommodate a 125. And in order to know which one we would love to be at, okay, we need to measure these couplings much better. And from the point of view model building, your model of new physics is good if you, at the same time of fitting the Higgs mass and so on and so forth, can put some check marks on here, you know, like good dark matter candidate, good dark matter, matter-antimatter asymmetry, good unification of all gauge interactions, okay, that you can measure. So as a model builder, so to say, you try to see how many problems you can solve. You know, you are, for example, for supersymmetry, we are adding all this extra matter. What are we getting back to that? Punto.
Can you characterize what has been excluded, if anything, by the recent observations?
Yes. One would say one of the things that have been excluded are Higgsless models, models that do not have a Higgs. But you have to be careful. Because in reality, people, as I said, those who have been working on Higgsless models don't want to give up. They still want to have a job and maybe better without changing subject. So there are ideas, okay, where in reality there is a dilaton that becomes the Higgs. Those models, we have a lot of discussions in our workshop 10 days ago about the state of the workshop is all about the state of the art, your question. where are we now with the Higgs mass and the Higgs couplings? For example, these models in which the dilaton is a Higgs, therefore the dilaton has to be 125 GeV and so on, they are, I would say, generically quite fine-tuned. Okay, so those models are still there. Are very smart people in our community working on that. As you see, we are supersymmetry. There are many options there. I didn't tell you about, but one of the important things is you look for the Susi particles, okay? And as the top is relevant for coupling strongly to the Higgs, the stop as well, the Susi partner. So, for example, at experiments, we are looking for the particles that couple stronger to the Higgs, like the stop, okay? We are looking for all of them, but those are putting more challenging bounds. And in most of these Susi models, we have many Higgses. So we are looking for new particles, correct? At the moment, when you measure, I didn't say it very in much detail, but for example, we are looking gluons going into Higgs. If there were new particles, that would be changed. So the fact that I have to fit this mass here, okay, and not here, kills many models, okay? Same here. Okay, the
fine-tuning.
No, these are not fine-tuning. This is just a region, you know, regions of parameter space. That's not fine-tuned. But, you know that you are not here, and you know that you're not here. Okay? So and even with the standard model, you know that you're not here. So there are a lot of things that you can say already about these models, from the mass and from the production.
One thing you avoided talking about was grand unification with gravity and general relativity. And since the Higgs is mass, and that's what general relativity is all about, is there any possible connection?
Maybe.
Definite maybe.
Maybe, but people have also looked at different options. We are trying to explain. We are trying not to touch gravity too much at the moment, but
mass is gravity.
Yeah, but it's not directly. We're trying to explain. We have so many things to explain that are at the scales before gravity becomes strong, correct? So that. And we don't understand exactly what happens when gravity becomes strong. So of course, when we are thinking about theories of grand unification, and I mentioned supersymmetry, for example, comes within a string theory, and you can think about unification of the gauge couplings, and eventually supersymmetry, local supersymmetry, can lead to supergravity. Okay, so that's another plus of supersymmetry. And here in this audience are people that are probably better qualified than me to answer more about it. But in fact, one time the question was made.
Yeah, but it is connected to energy, not to mass necessarily.
Yeah, well, but.
There is no direct connection, I believe, between the mechanics of mass generation and general relativity.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.